Hello again and welcome to the American Magazine podcast for September 27th. Here we feature part two of Kerry Weber's interview with Eboo Patel, where they talk about the charged issue regarding the so-called mosque at Ground Zero. Kerry spoke with Eboo Patel by phone.
The last time we spoke was earlier in the summer, and I'm sure anti-Islam prejudice existed then, but it did not seem to be as visible or loud as it has become in recent weeks, especially regarding the Park 51 controversy. What do you think has changed since we last spoke, if anything?
So I think the Park 51 controversy, in a curious way, exposed the levels of anti-Muslim sentiment and Islamophobia in America. The part of it that I find so disturbing is I call it an educated bigotry, which means that people have sought information that confirms their worst fears about Muslims and Islam. They have sought information about Muslims being dominating, being violent, being crusading, being hateful. So when people, you know, call in on NPR shows that I'm on, they say things like, you know, Eboo, if you would only stop imposing Sharia in America, if you would only stop practicing Dawah in America, if you would only stop practicing Taqiyya in America. I mean, people know words like Dawah and Sharia and Taqiyya because there is what I call an industry of Islamophobia out there, which is peddling a distorted image of Islam and Muslims and advancing the line that all Muslims want to dominate. They have books, they have websites, they have speaking campaigns that advance the message that all Muslims want to dominate and all Muslims are violent. And you can look them up yourself. I don't even know their religious backgrounds, right? I don't know how they're funded. It's the last thing I want to do is get into a direct confrontation with those people. What I do know, and I think this is very interesting for your readers, is that anti-Muslim sentiment mimics anti-Catholic sentiment very, very closely. So 100 years ago, the line against Catholics was that Catholics were the quote-unquote alien Roman, that they were papists, that their fidelity to the Vatican meant that they could never be loyal Americans, right? You literally hear the exact same charges leveled against Muslims, right? Muslims, their fidelity to the Quran means they can never be loyal Americans. Muslims are Islamists. It's the alien Muslim.
So how do you think that rhetoric from people with these prejudices, from these bigots, affects the possibility of productive dialogue?
What has been astonishing for me, I just want to, let's be clear about the logic here. So for many Americans, the only image of Muslims and Islam that they know is images of violence and hate. September 11th, the Christmas suicide bomber, the London train attack, et cetera, et cetera, right? And, of course, Osama bin Laden and the Muslim terrorists of the world speak about what they do in terms of Islam, okay? So people see acts of violence committed in the name of Islam, and then they hear somebody say, this is what Muslims are called to do. And what these anti-Muslim bigots do is effectively confirm that narrative. And they say, yes, the narrative of Osama bin Laden is the true Islam. True Muslims only want to dominate. True Muslims only want to be violent. And of course, they say it in their books and on their websites and through their speaking tours. And because those are the loudest voices, and those voices appear to explain the high-profile acts of Muslim violence that are all too prominent on the evening news, a large number of Americans have bought into that image and that narrative and are now literally repeating those talking points.
And how much fault do you think belongs to the media for sort of spreading these misconceptions, even if just using the term Ground Zero Mosque?
You know, I think the media has been played. You know, I think the media has been played by two groups of people. I think they've been played by Muslim extremists. I mean, think about this. Why does Osama bin Laden videotape beheadings? He videotapes them so that the media will play them. And for bin Laden, the videotape is even more important than the beheading because the videotape poisons the image of Islam in the world. it creates an us versus them scenario that Muslims are opposed to the world. Because if all you know about Islam is that videotape, that's your image of Muslims. And then the other group that has played the media is anti-Muslim bigots. You know, it astonishes me that a person with a three-decade-plus track record of interfaith cooperation, Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, can be swift-boated in the media by people with a long track record of hating Muslims. I'm astonished that a journalist didn't look at Pamela Geller or Robert Spencer when they started peddling this Ground Zero mega mosque garbage and say, aren't you just exploiting 9/11 families and Ground Zero to advance your message of hating Muslims?
What was your first reaction when you heard about the proposed Park 51 site?
So remember, there was a high profile piece about Cordoba House in the New York Times about 10 months ago, and it was all positive then. And then there was a high-profile Fox News profile about Daisy Khan and Cordoba House about 8 months ago. And she ended that profile by saying, you know, I like what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Right? So, I mean, I think that, you know, people involved in that effort thought that this is uncontroversial. What can be controversial about a group of Americans who want to start a community center focused on interfaith cooperation? A community center that's going to have a swimming pool, that's going to have a culinary school, that's going to have a gym, that's going to have a theater. Who would be opposed to this? Oh, and by the way, these people have been in the neighborhood for 20-some years. They've had an institution 10 blocks away. Oh, by the way, they're American Muslims. And I think what we have to recognize is that people knew, the media knew about the plans to build Cordoba House at this location for many, many months. This group did not create division by moving 10 blocks away. The group that created division was the people who called it a mega mosque at Ground Zero, called it a victory mosque, called it Hamas's representation in America, etc., etc. Those are the people who are the voices of division.
Now, I guess Al-Qaeda has always said, you know, America is an enemy of Islam. Do you think that by these types of protests that members of Al-Qaeda or other terrorist groups will sort of look at us and say, oh, look, they are doing exactly what they thought?
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, Al-Qaeda's major aim is to create a clash of civilizations. Their major aim is to create a Muslim versus Christian world. And unfortunately, this whole controversy is playing right into their hands.
Has your organization tried to address some of these conflicts and misconceptions directly with regard to this specific incident?
Yes. Our main goal as an organization is to build religious pluralism. And I'll define religious pluralism again. It's a society in which people from different backgrounds live in equal dignity and mutual loyalty. It's not about saying all religions are the same. It's not even about saying all religions are equal. It's about saying that people from different faith backgrounds ought to come together in ways that build understanding and cooperation. We consider intolerance and bigotry a severe threat to pluralism. Intolerance and bigotry against Catholics is a threat, against Jews is a threat, against Zoroastrians is a threat, against Muslims is a threat. So we are on this full case.
Now, is dialogue only a kind of long-term solution, or can it help in sort of immediate ways? Because the effects long-term are sort of these building of relationships and a recognition of dignity in one another. But in the short term, does it have the same effect?
I have a lot of hope in the medium term. I think that once bigotry is visible and as ugly as it's been, I think that the forces of inclusion in America go into action. Things like America Magazine, things like colleges and university, things like public radio, things like philanthropy, they start to say, wow, this isn't the America we believe in. We don't believe in an America in which mosques have bricks thrown through their window. We don't believe in an America in which 12-year-old Muslim girls are shouted down at town hall meetings. We don't believe in an America where people go into mosques and urinate on prayer rugs. We don't believe in an America where Muslim taxi drivers are slashed for the fact of being Muslim, right? So I have a lot of hope for the medium term. I just think that the forces of inclusion have to act powerfully and quickly, for the medium term to come soon and for the short term to not be as ugly.
And so those actions can be what?
I think that churches across the country ought to have partnerships with synagogues and mosques, congregational partnerships. And those congregational partnerships can include giving speeches at each other's houses of worship. They ought to include interfaith service projects. I think every college campus ought to consider itself a model of interfaith cooperation, meaning that it engages religious diversity issues robustly. The curriculum offers courses in interfaith cooperation. The president gives a major speech on interfaith cooperation. The freshman class does interfaith service projects. The staff is trained on religious diversity.
Now, you work with a lot of young adults in this interfaith work. What has been the reaction of the young adults that you work with to the Park 51 controversy?
So, you know, it's been so courageous, because the Park 51 controversy, again, it brought out a lot of people's latent anti-Muslim sentiments. So, you know, there's a story of a young woman who was an intern with us who was part of a church community that received an email chain that said, "Muslims can't be Americans for these 10 reasons." And she responded to that by saying, "You know, I interned with Muslims this summer. I made friendships with them. I did service projects with them." And she took a lot of heat for that. In fact, so much ugliness that her family and her had to leave her church, the church that she grew up in. So this is creating a conversation across the country that's not visible. It's creating conversations in living rooms, in restaurants, in churches, in communities. And the question is, are we going to extend full dignity to our American Muslim fellow citizens and neighbors?
And that's sort of discouraging, though, that the church would not rally behind her or would not recognize her viewpoint, and that it created more division in a way by speaking up.
But the encouraging thing is that she went to another church that fully embraced her. And again, I mean, I think what we have right now is a profound split in America around whether Muslims are going to be treated as neighbors or whether they're going to be viewed as terrorists. And it's like other splits. It's like the split over civil rights. It's like the split over gay rights. It's like the split over women's rights. And in America, the forces of inclusion always win. But we have to act fast and strong. And let me say one more thing about this, Carrie. Mm-hmm. A good deal of this anti-Muslim hatred is being sacralized. It's being articulated in theological terms. The guy leading the Quran burning in Florida says this is what Jesus would do.
How does someone justify that?
I just think that this is a really strong signal to religious communities and religious leaders. There is a real chance that unless you are proactive about embracing your neighbor from a different religion, your theology is about to be poisoned by the forces of intolerance, because they are not shy about saying, "Jesus tells me to burn the Quran."
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I think I think this is going to require a whole new theology. Or, I mean, the truth is that theology already exists. The theology already exists. It just needs to be more salient in the discourse of faith communities.
Right.
I mean, it needs, you know, the people who are in favor of burning the Quran in the name of Jesus, they preach from the pulpit about that message every Sunday. That's their talking point every Sunday. Those of us who believe in embracing our neighbors of different backgrounds, are we as loud? Are we as forthright? Are we as compelling? Are we as cogent?
And why is that? Why do you think that we are not maybe as loud?
I think that those other people saw a sense of urgency in the quote-unquote Muslim monster, and I think that now the forces of inclusion are seeing a sense of urgency in the ugliness of this bigotry.
So do you have hope?
Absolutely. I have hope for the medium term. I just hope that the medium term comes fast and that the short term isn't that ugly.
What about people who say, you know, that people working on Park 51 have a right to build it there, but it's just insensitive?
So I just think, I want to know how it's insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
How is it insensitive for a group of Americans in a mixed neighborhood that includes strip clubs, off-track betting parlors, and restaurants. How is it insensitive for a group of Americans to start an interfaith center in the neighborhood that they have been present in for two decades?